Right, all right. Welcome back to another episode of The Virgin and the Bees. I'm joined today by my friend Bella. She's amazing. We met back in high school, like freshman year orientation, I think it was.
That's
Like,
right.
yeah, very, very beginning. And yeah, she's an incredible person, and we always have the best conversation. So I'm very excited to have her here today. Welcome, Bella.
Oh, thanks, Arena. I just thank you so much for inviting me here. I love your podcast and the content and the work and just everything about it. So thank you for having me.
Thank you
It's so
so
good
much. That means the
to
world. I'm so glad that you enjoy it. And yeah, it's been so great to like hear people say that they like it and whatnot. It like it means the world. And I really hold your opinion highly. So thank you. Yeah. So today we were talking about what we wanted to talk about. And you brought up this something that I thought was really, really cool and fascinating and kind of pertinent to what I think a lot of people, especially LGBTQ plus individuals, experience these days, and I guess in general, but I feel like it's like more these days than when we were in high school. Maybe it's because of like m more acceptance or like TikTok, or I don't know, but kind of like the idea of like how your sexuality kind of affects your perception of like yourself and your expression and how you express yourself. That's another way of saying expression, but kind of like your body image and all that. And so you kind of had a really cool story to share. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even introduce myself with the pronouns. So I'm Bella. I am a bisexual woman. My pronouns are she, her. And to answer your question, I guess we could start with that, just like how I came into my sexuality.
Yeah.
Okay, we could start off with that. I realized I was bisexual, I think formally around, it's such a hard thing to say that, like, yeah, I'm bisexual, like, just to pinpoint it, but I had always wondered it. Like, I think the earliest time was I was 11 or 12. Like, that was when I started to think, like, oh, why do the way that I interact with and perceive, other girls, why does it feel so strange? I thought it was like insecurity, or the way that I perceive myself, maybe it was a self-esteem thing. But as I kind of came into my own, and I mean, I dated mostly, cisgender boys, men, like for a lot of my life. I had been in a relationship with a woman, but not until college. Like, my relationship with the term bisexual wasn't really, I don't think it came into fruition really until maybe my first or second year of college. And I really have to credit another fellow bisexual queen of mine. So she kind of told me about the whole idea of, or just the phenomenon of gender fluidity, just or even labels being on a spectrum, which is why, the whole concept of labels is so fascinating to me, because with the word that a label brings, there are so many connotations and ideas that people have about that. And that is why I was not comfortable with saying I was bisexual for a long time, because I thought, oh, you have to be, I mean, the myths, right? Like, well, if you're bisexual, you're only attracted to like 50% to men and 50% to women and all this other stuff. But for me, a lot of that attraction was more of, and that is already in itself another really complicated thing to get into, but to basically narrow it down, I felt that I could vibe or be attracted to people who identified as the way I do, or just in other ways. Like, I think one of the earliest sort of thoughts that I had that sort of related to how I am attracted to or vibe with other people romantically, sexually, was if everyone in the world were unable to see, I think I could really vibe with anyone. And to that extent, like, I don't think it matters how they look or what they have. Like, I mean, I know biologically a lot of people will identify based off of, like, obviously genitals, right? Like, in that whole gender binary, like problematicity, whatever. But for me, it was like, I don't think it really matters to me. It's just if I vibe with someone, I vibe with them, you know? But I didn't realize that that had like there was a whole phenomenon behind that. I mean, you can call it bisexuality, pansexuality. You know, I think one of them is like demisexuality, where you have to talk to someone and then that will help determine whether or not you're attracted to them. But I think that was what kind of led me into considering that I may not just be a straight woman, despite the fact that I had historically only been dating like cisgender, you know, men. Like, middle school was just a lot. I remember there was this guy who was really, really into me, and I found that this was a pattern. Like, guy would be into me, I wouldn't really be into him, but everyone kind of like, oh, like you guys would be so great together or whatever. And just because we would like talk well and converse well and interact well with each other, people thought, well, that's, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend. And I didn't really understand that attraction until, you know, I started to assign, like, well, if I talk with this person and get along with them well, that must mean I'm attracted to them. And that goes into the whole compet thing, which, you know, a previous amazing podcast that you had, like, really delved into. Yeah, that really, you know, I don't think I had really experienced a level of closeness and intimacy until maybe high school. And even then, it was with someone who I would say had traits that people would associate with more femininity, which again goes back into that whole thing about labels and about gender expression, because this person had, you know, like to give an example, like you would. I think people tend to assume that most cisgender men will like, oh, a man, short hair, like a man. But this person had long hair, for example. And like, it was like traditionally, you know, men don't usually wear their hair longer than their shoulders, but this person did. And then, you know, the following person I dated after that also had long hair, but it was a girl. So, you know, that was a whole like thing because I was like, was I attracted to this idea of femininity, or is there something about a person's physical manifestation, how they look, that like makes me more attracted to them? And so that really just, you know, I guess bisexuality as a whole, it's so much more complicated than just like, you know, sometimes I'm into men, sometimes I'm into women. It's so much more about like, I just vibe with you if I vibe with you, and you could be a man or woman or however else you identify, and that's just that. So, yeah, that's kind of how I wanted to delve into this topic. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Bravo, bravo. Great TED Talk. Thank you for sharing that. That's great. Yeah, and what you said about like it being kind of more than just one thing, like bisexuality, pansexuality, queer identity. However, you know, this idea of sexuality being on a spectrum, like it can be different things to different people. Like as you said, just oh, it's just me vibing with people, and maybe it's just platonic vibing, maybe it's romantic vibing, whatever. Like that may be someone's you know, sexual, romantic, whatever identity and how they work. And then for someone else, it could be like, oh yeah, the actual physical attributes do play a big role. And so, and there's all sorts of other like options as well. I just listed two. And even just saying options sounds weird. Like as you said, it's a very complicated thing for people,
Because
different
it's
people.
not options either. I mean, and then just going into the whole, like, I didn't even understand what pansexuality was, but the more that I started to come into understanding what bisexuality was, I was like, well, why don't I identify as pansexual? There's a lot of overlap between bisexuality and pansexuality. And, you know, I think for the purpose of just the history behind how I came into my own and feeling more comfortable with bisexuality, because I feel like I fit that. I think what I've come to realize now is that these things don't define you define them. And so, like, even within the bisexual community, you could be someone who is like maybe sexually attracted to women, but only romantically attracted to men, or something to that effect. And then, you know, that goes into another, you know, conversation about like, okay, sexuality for, you know, just the physicality, maybe like that specific aspect of that. Some people might be asexual, but also bisexual. Like they don't feel like they need to have that physical intimacy with someone in order to be attracted to them. And then that just goes into an experience that I can't really speak on because I'm definitely not asexual, but I do have friends who are. And oh my gosh, like I would definitely recommend the show to them too, because like this is just an amazing, just plethora of things that are worthy of being spoken about. But yeah, going back to what you were saying about the whole this being kind of a phenomenon that we're more easily able to talk about because of the just amazing strides with which our community has made it possible to talk about these things. I mean, we have to thank just the, you know, people who have made pride more of a thing that we can talk about and all that. But yeah, labels, like another thing I wanted to touch on too was the way that labels can harm the way people perceive you. Like, for example, I am a bisexual woman, but in a, you know, heterosexual relationship, right? Like I am with someone who identifies as a straight male, cisgender male. And like, I recognize my privilege in being a bisexual woman who presents, you know, femme-wise, and like, you know, people wouldn't even think that I might be queer or a member of the LGBTQ community because of the way that CompEt allows me to exist in that space. But then, you know, it doesn't erase also that I still am bisexual. Like, just because, like, say I got married to this person, it doesn't erase that I am still bisexual. And I feel like that is something that a lot of people still don't really understand about, like, this community as a whole, the bisexual community. So yeah, which can be very harmful in sadly a lot of ways. But yeah, labels.
Definitely, definitely. I'm so glad you brought that up about like, even if a bisexual woman is in a relationship with a straight cisgender man, that doesn't mean she's not bisexual. Mm-hmm. Other way around, if a bisexual, pansexual, queer male is in a relationship with a straight woman, that doesn't mean that he isn't bi or pan or whatever his identity is. Like his identity is still his identity. And it, yeah. And actually bisexual woman, and there's, I found, so when Bella first talked to me about doing this topic, I usually, if I can, I like to include some studies or statistics on like what we're talking about. And when Bella told me, you know, we decided to talk about how bisexual women view themselves and like that kind of topic, I'm like, I really highly doubt I'm going to be able to find a lot of research on this when it comes to bisexual women and like self-expression. And I told you, so I'm like, I don't think I'll find anything, but I'll like, you know, tool around, see what I can find. And there's a whole academic publishing journal dedicated to bisexuality. It's called Journal of Bisexuality. I know, I was floored. I was so excited.
I got goosebumps, like, girl. I love that.
Yeah. It's in their bio, like bio, you know, they don't have a bio, it's a journal, but like in the like, description of the journal, they talk about how, you know, there's been a lack of bisexual representation in the literature because, which is, you know, it has been. So that's why I'm like, I don't think I'll find anything. But they said, because of this, you know, we wanted to dedicate a journal to bisexual research. And so that's super cool. I will link it in the description, but basically, and this has kind of also been in other research too, outside of the Journal of Bisexuality, but it's been found that bisexual people suffer like—
can attest to that, girl. I can attest to that.
this idea that they don't really feel a sense of community as much because obviously, you know, if they're not in the heteronormative world, that they don't really feel like they fit in there, but also in the LGBTQ plus community itself, there's also discrimination against bisexual people sometimes, you know, people being biphobic and whatnot. So it's kind of this idea that they're ostracized on like both ends and there's biphobia from both ends. And so, so that's kind of, and that's been like researched more, and there's like multiple studies on that, I think, and that's like kind of something that's coming to light more, I think, and people, I'm starting to see people like try to like fight that within the LGBTQ plus community, or maybe not fight I don't know if fight's the right word, but like bring up that issue, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But one study that I found specifically had to do with bisexual women and self-esteem. And yes. It was, get ready for this, a 13-year longitudinal study. So they interviewed people like 13 years ago or 13 years before this came out. And then they interviewed them again, like 13 years later. So it's like a bisexual long-term-ish study, which I'm like, what? That's crazy. and so it happened in Norway, and they were looking at the relationship between self-esteem, perception of social acceptance, and feelings of loneliness amongst lesbian women, bisexual women, and straight women.
Oh my gosh. What did it say, girl? Tell us the results.
Yes, I'll tell you the results. So basically, I don't have any hard data on this because the article had a paywall, so I couldn't read the whole
thing. Oh my gosh.
But
yeah, do something about that, girl. Oh God, this is gonna take us back to high school when we were talking about education system. Oh man, okay. All right, I'm getting you all fired up now. But
yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
Okay. Why are they gatekeeping this from us? Okay, anyway, but
gatekeeping from the masses, you know, education's only for the rich. If you are in college though, you can probably access it. But I did read the abstract, and the abstract, they said that at baseline, so when they interviewed these people, basically when they're adolescents, so when they're teenagers, they found that there were no differences in self-esteem amongst those three groups. So lesbian, bisexual, and heterosexual women. Yeah, so there weren't really any differences there, but at follow-up, which is when they're at ages like 25 to like 30, 32, so like it's you know, when they're like young adults, bi women had, compared to lesbian and straight women, they had lower self-esteem, lower levels of perceived acceptance, and higher levels of loneliness.
Wow. Oh, I don't love that for us. That's really sad.
No.
That's really tragic. Oh my gosh. That's really interesting though.
Yeah. It's sad, but it kind of sheds light onto like,
oh yeah,
is an issue. Even though like you were saying about how you're like, oh yeah, I am a, you know, straight passing quote unquote person. Dude. And so therefore there is privilege like associated with that, but also there's like other, I mean, I'm not saying that that is what I just said is the case for you, but like, I feel like people have this perception of like, oh, like, you know, bi people have it so easy or whatever, or they like get the best of both worlds or whatever, when it's like, not, that's not necessarily the story.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And for probably way more reasons than just, you know, having that experience, right? Like, I mean, of course, we're not able to access the entirety of the study and all of the other maybe implications behind why that is the case. But I mean, I can't help but wonder why it is, you know, like at the same time, you know, like having that just alienation perhaps could be, you know, the reason behind that. But wow, thank you for that study. That's like super cool that's for a journal on bisexual. Yes, like we really, I love that for us. Like that's super, super cool. A lot of my sources that I used for like, you know, preparing for talking about this subject was just myself, my experiences, because yeah, it is about like, oh, labels and how I've experienced labels. But like, I think there's also something to be said kind of externally, not that I'm really citing any specific, you know, work here, but I want to, like, whoever does, you know, is aware of who came up with this, just the bringing to light of what our society is, which tends to be run by like very white, you know, patriarchy, where there almost seems to be this, like, I mean, socially, almost like a hierarchy in which people experience, you know, just justice and equality, I suppose. Like at the top of TikTok, I guess. But like there's always like, okay, white cis men tend to, you know, benefit the most from the way our society is and whatnot. There's a phenomenon that I wanted to touch on based off of what you were saying earlier about like bisexual men and women and people in general, like in relationships that are heterosexual, like it's interesting the way in which the label bisexual has functioned within this system. This, I don't even know how to refer to it, but the one that is white and patriarchal, in which men who are termed bisexual are often pigeonholed into, I guess, within the gay community, the stereotype that it is just the gateway into being gay, right? Like, which is super problematic. And then the other end of it, where bisexual women who, you know, are within this system tend to be pigeonholed into being, you know, experimental within a phase, which, you know, my own culture has been very guilty of, you know, viewing bisexual women as, to the effect that it is not legitimized as a very real identity and experience because of just the, you know, false, I guess, binary that that creates, where it's like, well, you're either like a little gay and experimental and it's just, you know, two women hot, and then they end up like figuring it out and being saved by their male counterpart when they get married to a male, you know, or like, oh, they figured out they're actually lesbian, so that's what happened when they ended up being married to a gay woman, you know. Like, I just think that there's something to be said about how, yeah, that study you mentioned, I mean, it's of no surprise to me as someone who is bisexual that that is the case. Just, you know, thinking of this other just overarching phenomenon of the way that this label ends up being very harmful, and why I can understand why some people who in their, you know, elaborated experience have very similar experiences to me, but prefer not to use the label of bisexuality, and how, you know, the system of power and disempowerment can keep people from feeling like they can be comfortable with that label. So to that effect, I'm very grateful for labels for providing that for me, and for the way that it allows for these studies to happen, because then otherwise, how would we be able to survey or research or examine the ways in which people who experience this, you know, navigate life in that sense? So yeah, is there anything else that you have research-wise? I really want to learn from this too, like just labels and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the only, that's the only study that I wrote down like findings of that I was like, oh, this will be good to talk about.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, but I will link that Journal of Bisexuality in the description, and Bella, I'll just send it to you after this, and you can search all you want and read all the abstracts. I'm very glad that that's being done, and as you said, yeah, labels have a good side and a bad side, and depending on the person, and just in terms of how labels function in that infrastructure that you were talking about of society, like it could, it, that is one good side of like, it helps us learn more because we're able to do this type of research. But I could see how within that structure too, it would be harmful to someone who's, as you said, like doesn't, I don't want to say benefits the least, because it's not even like they benefit, but like at the top is that like straight cisgender white male. Oh, at the bottom might be like a queer person of color. If maybe, you know, someone who's in a community where they don't accept LGBTQ plus people as much, which there's a lot of, and someone, you know, comes out as trans or non-binary or bisexual, like I could see how that could, like they could suffer like harm, either emotional or even physical, from like from that. But I don't know, this is going into a whole other thing, because then there's also like being proud of your identity, and some people feel like they like really find themselves in their like in that label and being able to label, and it's a really good thing for them, and for others it's like constricting. And we talked about this more in our previous episode called Labels and Bi Problems with Lauren Van. So so if you're listening and you haven't listened to that and you're really interested in what we're talking about, you can go take a listen to that episode.
I think that was the first episode I listened to, actually. Which is like, there's just a lot of overlap within that, which like, queen, I love that episode. But yeah, I like, oh my gosh, I had like this thought I wanted to bring up also, but now it's kind of slipping my mind. I think it was about like just like how labels can also just benefit the quote norm of people of like straights, I guess, like or like the perceived like everyone is straight, everyone else is like other type thing, where like how do labels benefit outside of that, you know? Because imagine, I don't know, this is getting into hypotheticals, which I don't really like to do too much, but like a
Love
world where,
hypotheticals. Let's do
yeah,
it.
okay, you know what, because you know what, I got you, girl. So like what if we lived in like a world where we didn't have to be or weren't just ostracized in any way because of that orientation, you know? Would labels be so important to people, or would they be such a like quote big deal, like, or just you know, going back to that whole thing of the way you are perceived or functioning in that infrastructure in society socially, how just the lack of even getting into labeling yourself, you know, in terms of your attraction to other people, how that can also create spaces for you within the world at large, because it doesn't create this like otherness that people tend to then ostracize you or blame you or subjugate you to some sort of horrible mistreatment, prejudice you know, against for. It's just really interesting to me how also just labels have either helped or hurt us in terms of, I guess, our own like identity dysphoria. I'll kind of elaborate more on that. Like, I remember, you know, going to an institution that, you know, doesn't necessarily congratulate you for being out, you know, like how it would be, you know, more safe for you to just not go about your life like being, oh, I'm bisexual, or oh, I'm gay, or whatever else. Like, but then the ways in which your gender expression can then be like thwarted as a result of that to keep yourself safe, you know? So labels then provide like a box in which you can safely navigate life beyond, unfortunately, how you truly identify. So it's kind of that double-edged sort of like, yeah, we need these labels so people don't, you know, see us as like a threat to this normativity, but also like we need these labels in order to remind ourselves of who you are, or at least that's like how I feel about it. So yeah, just it's really interesting how that works, I suppose. But one thing I really do appreciate is how platforms are kind of making it more normal for us to proclaim our pronouns, I think, because that can really help people to kind of stake their claim in terms of identifying the boundary with which they exist. Because I think someone who might, for example, present in the like heteronormative world is like, oh, that's a woman, clearly, but like we wouldn't know if that person was actually like inside experiencing this extreme gender dysphoria because they're actually trans, for example, but they don't want to use the label of trans, but identify as he, him, they, them, something like that. Like, I think that's a really great segue that we're seeing. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you had to experience, like, as you said, you went to an institution where you didn't feel like you could be completely safe in expressing how you wanted to. So I'm sorry you went through that. But
Thank
I know
you.
that, yeah, I know that that's an experience that a lot of LGBTQ plus people experience to varying degrees and levels. And as you said at the beginning, like everyone's experience of how they, what their sexuality or gender expression means to them is different. Also, people's experience of how they navigate that is different based on their environment and all sorts of other factors. And then, yeah, again, with the pronouns thing like that, I totally agree. I think it's great for everyone to do because it, even if you are a cis person, meaning that you were the genitals and body and chromosomes that you were born with reflect what you identify as. Like, so if you know, have like testicles and a penis and you identify as a man, or you have like, you know, a vulva and ovaries and all that, and you identify as a woman, like, even if that's the case, like, it still is really great to have your pronouns because it just normalizes people sharing, like, hey, this is how I identify and this is what I want you to refer to me as. And so it just makes it normal for it just, it's just normalizing. And it's for cis people, for trans people, for non-binary, for anywhere in between, you know, and even it allows people to, I think, experiment with the idea of being somewhere else on a gender binary, a gender spectrum.
Yeah.
Like I can't really speak to this personally because I am a cis woman. So yeah. I feel pretty like grounded in that. Like, but I know a lot of like my friends and people where they like experimenting with androgyny or like playing with, hey, maybe I'll put a they pronoun, or you know, I'll see what that feels like. And I think it's giving people that room to just be flexible and experiment. I mean, experiment's such a loaded word when it comes to LGBTQ. Yes.
I understand like where you're coming from. It's just that navigating, and I love that word you use, the room to do things. I think labels often feel like boxes or boundaries, and I mean, boundaries have a little bit of an empowerment to them because you're the one setting them, right? You're not like, or I guess arguably someone is setting them for you, but I love that idea of the room that creates. That's so true. Like it kind of expands us beyond, you know, you're this or that. And that's a really, really beautiful thing that you brought up. I liked that you brought that up.
Well, it's all cascading off of each other. You brought up the pronouns, so I was just elaborating on that. But yeah, there's something else I was gonna say, and I can't remember what it
Girl,
was.
Girl, that was me. It's okay.
It was in relation to something you said, but whatever. I just got distracted. But this was something else that I was thinking of. But I remember when we were first talking about this, you had sent me a Reddit post of someone talking about femmes versus butches. I don't know how to
butch. I think the labels that are used.
Do you want to maybe talk about that, because you seem to have like your own like kind of like relationship with that?
It's okay, so the more that I looked into it, and I kind of talked to some of my friends who are lesbian and identify as like, oh, that was another like cool thing that I learned, was like WLW, which stands for Women Loving Women, which I will now abbreviate as Woolawoos. Like Women Loving Women, apparently there's a lot, and I can't speak to this as like, you know, lesbian, you know, woman, but as a bisexual woman, I heard or learned that within the community, or just from what I like read or see on social media, there's actually a lot of, I don't know how to put this nicely, not contention, but there's conflicting, I think that's the best way to put it, conflicting ideas as to who gets to use what labels, and I guess the gatekeeping that often tends to happen within women and loving women spaces. And those two words are operative, I think, in a very like general sense within the bisexual community in terms of gender expression. I think that's the best way to put it, gender expression, where I remember being single and talking to other, you know, women loving women and about like, oh, she's like, oh, mask versus femme, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that would, I think, kind of skew the way, especially as a young, you know, budding bisexual, like figuring out her place in the world, like that really had an effect and a play on how I came into being comfortable with my own sexuality. Because I remember a time in which I like, me and my then girlfriend were like, someone had told us like, oh, so who's like the spoon and the fork or something in the relationship or something? Because I think they were trying to be funny, going off of the idea of like, who wears the pants, right? Like that's like a very common, like in, you know, same sex relationships, like that's a common like question, unfortunately. But I think maybe it depends. Maybe it comes from a place of someone just genuinely not knowing, like maybe it's ignorance that isn't malicious, you know, but it could also come from a place of like, they don't know what it's like, girl. Like you just, it's like, girl, I'm dating a girl. Like, what else do you think? Like, and then I saw this just brilliant, I don't know, I think it was a friend of mine who had said this, but they were like, oh yeah, like it's more like chopsticks, you know, like you just, you know, you work together and it just is what it is, and you're equals in that relationship. There's no spoon and fork. Like you just both work, you know? And then it got into this whole conversation of like, who's the more male one or the more like mask one? And I'm like, why does there need to be that binary, I guess? And so to kind of answer your question about that Reddit post, which was basically insinuating, like, actually, I'll be honest, I don't even remember what the whole premise of the post was, but it had something to do with like butch and femme qualifiers within the bisexual community. I think it was going along the effect of like, some bisexuals are either more male or more female. And like, why are we creating a binary within your binary, girl? Like, why are we doing that? Like, and so I think this was a perfect segue that you brought up, just because we were just talking about pronouns and the room that that creates, and how, you know, kind of connecting this again to this overlying theme of just, you know, labels and how they can be both helpful and harmful. I think I loosely use the word like, I am femme, you know, to kind of describe the way I am within my queer identity. But I also feel like there's a lot of research I haven't done within like why that could be problematic, say, to people who, like, for example, and this is a documentary I really want to watch, but it's, I think it's like Butch or something. And it kind of, is like, it surveys kind of the experiences of different lesbian women who identify as Butch, like in their gender expression, and just the phenomenon of that and all this problematic stuff about like, oh yeah, like Butch lesbians want to be men or something, like all this really problematic stuff, which is like, we are not existing to become men, which is the most ironic thing, because within the infrastructure I mentioned earlier, like that is the last thing we would want to be, is the oppressor or whatever. But like, that aside, I just wanted to touch on how, I guess within the bisexual community, I couldn't find the exact post, but there was like actual terminology that is specifically for bisexual women who identify as more like femme presenting versus like mask presenting. But I guess femme and mask is kind of like the operative terms that I see happening a lot more and more. But I think historically within like lesbian spaces, especially during like, you know, oh my gosh, the Stonewall riots, and just the way that bisexual people like existed in those spaces, there was a lot of infighting within those groups, within lesbians and bisexuals, in terms of like who is truly like a woman loving woman and such. And that had to do with how they labeled themselves with like femme and butch. So I thought that was just interesting to see that evolution just up to our time now, where I, you know, to tie this in with my own kind of experiences, my boyfriend had asked me, how does your bisexuality, or how do you sit with your bisexuality now that you are in a more heterosexual relationship? Do you feel it's changed, or do you feel like the way that you present yourself is different? And I kind of wanted to get into that, because you had said in the very beginning of the podcast, like, oh yeah, Bella, like, is going to talk kind of more about body image, that sort of thing. I remember being just, I mean, and this is speaking more to, you know, the mental, you know, illnesses I was fighting at the time, which I still fight with, but, you know, was going through and struggling with, was I was just in a very dark place at the time that I was with my then girlfriend. And I think that contributed a lot to how well I was eating and treating myself. And it was very toxic, because I remember like going through a time where people would compliment me on how I looked because I was so thin. And like, clearly I'm not nearly as thin as I was then. I'm eating good now, sometimes a little too good, but like, great, I remember that being,
yeah. Anyone who's watching can see that, but if you're listening, she looks great.
Girl, thank you so much. But like, it's just, it's interesting how, I guess, femininity is, you know, you are championed for being a more feminine woman in the, I guess, stereotypical beauty standards of being thinner, or like having longer hair or some other way. And the way that that made me feel at the time, where I wasn't, you know, eating right and all this stuff, like when I was with this person, like I remember feeling like I had to be more like her in order to be enough. And this is kind of maybe more speaking to more personal stuff, but you know, I saw some posts that was just like, just because you've only been in a relationship with like, it was like one of those like call out posts, or not call out posts, but like, oh, bisexuals who have been through this, bisexuals have been, you are valid, you know, that sort of thing. There's one that really spoke to me, which was like, bisexuals who have been in a relationship with like only one other woman, and maybe that didn't work out so well, you are still bisexual and you are still valid. Like, in that time, I was with someone who wasn't right for me, and, you know, all that stuff. But I guess what I'm getting at is, it just the toxicity with which like I was continuing to feed into being enough for this person by like not starving myself, but not allowing myself to enjoy things, because I felt like I had to fit into something that would appeal more to her, I suppose, or to the way that people saw us. And then kind of going back to that whole you know, infrastructure we were talking about, where very disenfranchised people within the queer community tend to often be, I can't remember who quoted this, but someone said, like, Black women are the most disrespected people in America. Like, just going to how a lot of the time they don't fit into Eurocentric standards. And me as a person of color, I'm not Black, but I don't also fit into a lot of Eurocentric beauty standards. Like, that can also feed into a lot of this gender dysphoria and the way that we express ourselves and the way that we are seen as feminine or truly women loving women. And yeah, it just, the weird ways in which, you know, being a woman loving women in certain spaces where we would be perceived as like predatory for like, oh, so you like girls? Well, I'm just going to cover myself up now that we're like changing out in our bathing suits and stuff. It's just really fascinating the way that I felt that way in that relationship, in that sense of being bisexual versus, you know, to answer my boyfriend's question of what I was mentioning earlier, I feel now that I still am very much bisexual, but I don't pander in the same ways that I did with that person in ways I do with him, though I do recognize the privilege in which we live in this heteronormative lifestyle of being a heterosexual couple and presenting as straight passing to other people, and just kind of navigating being okay with that, being okay with like, yeah, I live this life, but some people don't need to know that I am bisexual, and that is okay. That doesn't make me any less bisexual. But also kind of that double-edged sword side of that of, well, they'll never know. So like, you know, am I being truly or living my best bisexual life? You know what I mean? So I guess that was just kind of what I wanted to get into, is just the interesting phenomenon that I personally experienced and like the labels and expression that I felt I had to fit into as a result of the boundaries with which those labels are associated with, especially in being with a woman versus being with a man. Which of course, you know, just because it's a woman and a man doesn't mean like it's fundamentally different. I think going back to how I vibe with other people, it's a lot more about like, I just happen to vibe with that person and they happen to be a woman, and I vibe with this person and they happen to be a man. But yeah, it goes back to people, and people are just so much more complicated than like, oh, well, you're with a man, so you're just this, or you're with a woman, so you're just that, you know? So yeah, just to kind of broadly answer your question there. Yeah, that was kind of something I wanted to touch on. So yeah.
Awesome. There's so many things to unpack there.
Girl, I know.
But that's my purpose. Thank you for sharing that, especially with well, first of all, what you said about like the whole idea of people, like how people perceive you versus like not everyone has to know I'm bisexual, and that kind of goes into like performative like LGBTQ stuff, like as long as you know, and I guess it goes beyond just like LGBTQ plus, but things is in terms of how, and then that goes into expression, and sorry, yeah, I'm like tripping all up over my words, but that kind of goes into like, for example, like with your bisexuality, like it's just, you know, and you're friends know, and your community knows, and so like that's kind of like, does it really matter if this random person on the street knows or not? But then there's also that thing of, in your expression, as you said, you express more femme, quote unquote, and so it's still kind of, there's not really as much of a dysphoria there, except for people not recognizing or seeing the full aspect of how you identify. But then again, there's all those ideas of what bisexuality should look like, quote unquote. But then with other people, like how they express and identify is like, if it's maybe not congruent with the way that society expects you to identify or whatever, it can be I'm not even going to go there because like, I can't speak to that personally, but I know that for some people, like having people, random people on the street see their expression is like very important to them. And so like, it's once again, the whole thing of it being different for different people, but that just reminded me of that whole, like, and I guess it deeply ties into what we're talking about, which is how you express and how people perceive you versus what your sexuality and identity is. But yeah, the other thing, which was talking about how you viewed yourself and your self-perception in relation mm-hmm. to being with a woman versus a man was, mm-hmm. I'm sorry you're going through those body issues. Obviously, I never mm-hmm. like to hear that people are going through hard things, especially you, but yeah, that was really interesting. And obviously, like, different for different people. And like, as you said, it's also the people themselves and mm-hmm. where you were mentally that could have like played into those differences. But
sure, yeah.
One thing that I was also thinking about, like, you had said how you were like trying to almost be more like her. And like, it's interesting when you think about like, when you're with a man or if you're a guy with a woman, like with someone who is very different and in a different kind of social construct of beauty, quote unquote. I'm not phrasing this very well, but like, for mm-hmm. example, like how men look and how they're quote unquote supposed to look is like very different from women. And so like, I'm just, it's like, it's almost like you're not on the same playing field, which sounds mm-hmm. bad to put it that way, but it's almost like, as you said, you were comparing yourself to her and trying to like, And that kind of made me think about, like, for me, like, I'm part, like, Middle Eastern or, mm-hmm. you know, not really Middle Eastern, like, South Asian or however you want to. Oh. Basically, I'm a very, like, my genetics mean that I have more hair and dark hair just, like, all mm-hmm. over my body. And so, like, compared to white women who tend to have lighter colored hair or mm-hmm. Asian woman, not South Asian, but like
Asian woman, yeah,
like they tend to have just not a lot of body hair in general. And so, and you know, there's in our society, there's, as you said, Eurocentric beauty standards, and I think also like not just Eurocentric, but in a lot of other cultures, this idea that women aren't supposed to be as hairy, you know. And so, mm-hmm. with like, in terms of myself and how I view myself, like, with men, I feel a lot more comfortable with that because mm-hmm. most men are hairier than me and it's not really like a big deal. But like with women, I'm just like, oh my God, like, you know, cause I also identify as more quote unquote feminine, though mm-hmm. feminine doesn't look a certain way when it comes to like hair and stuff. It's just what we've like perceived it to be. But, exactly. But it's kind of like this idea of like, oh yeah, like what if I'm like hairier than her, and then like that insecurity and that.
And it's exactly, you hit the nail on the head. Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. Like, I felt like, and those are like social, I think, constructs of how I was framing myself, you know, like why couldn't I just enjoy it? You know, I remember feeling that way and feeling like there were good times, and I remember those good times, like, they were always defined by how natural things felt. And when things didn't feel natural, when I felt like I had to curate myself into that, or when it was a comparing game, which is unfortunate because women are so often pitted against each other, you know, like, you're absolutely right. Like, I think, yeah, you put it into words, what that weirdness I was feeling was that, and this kind of ties into what I was, you know, talking about earlier when I was like, I didn't know how to relate to other girls my age. Like, in kind of a, not in a normal way, I just felt weird about it, I suppose. And that could have been attraction that I didn't recognize then. But it also could have been that also just you know, what's the word that I'm looking for? Unavoidable competition that people tend to put girls in, where, you know, instead of recognizing, oh my gosh, I've been binging so much, like, you know, 90s to 2000s, like pop star queens, like the way Spears was mistreated. It was done so wrong by the industry. The way the industry failed Lindsay Lohan, for example, like the way like Hilary Duff and Lindsay Lohan were like in a feud that was made by the media, for example, both talented, beautiful women. And like, why does it always have to come to that? And like, especially in a relationship, like constantly feeling like, am I supposed to be the more beautiful one? And the pressures that creates, you know? Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that. Thank you for bringing that up. That's exactly what I was like, trying to get at. But yeah, it was very like, in my first experience of being with a woman that way, like it was very much, it was giving undue competition where there didn't need to be competition, which is very complicated because like in a partnership, in a loving partnership, like you should just be prioritizing loving each other and not about, you know, how you can one up the other in certain things, which is very toxic. But you know, of course it went down to the person and not necessarily that she was a woman. It just so happened that she was a woman. But anyway, yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you for bringing up the competition thing of just, yeah, girls from a young age are kind of taught to, like, you know, compare each other and you know, as you said, there's that competition thing. It almost gets me wondering if that thing that we're talking about is a result of that. That was a very vague way of saying that, but you know what I mean?
No, I totally understand. And then, you know, I mean, obviously we don't have all the answers because we only were able to access the abstract of that study, but I just feel like they're just, I mean, clearly from just the few, I don't know how long it's been that we've been talking about, but just talking about this, there's just so much to that experience. And I'm only one person. I can't speak for everybody, but I just, you know, that was a really good question my boyfriend asked me, because he is so respectful of my own experiences, and he never wants me to feel that I have to be a certain way in order to feel loved or anything. And that's something that, you know, from years of just not being with the right people, like, it just, that taught me, like, yeah, you deserve to be with someone who makes you feel loved and makes you feel like you don't have to be anything else, you know?
Amen.
Just the importance of that, you know, regardless of how you identify. So.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. And on that point earlier, you said something about chopsticks and how instead of viewing it as like a fork and a spoon, yeah, viewing it as two chopsticks, two people working together, like, yeah, that doesn't just go for wool, as you said, loving woman relationships. That goes for any type of partnerships. Like, if that spoon versus fork feels right to you in your relationship, then that's great. But it does not have to be that way, regardless of the genders of the people in that relationship. It could be two men, a woman and a man, two non-binary people, whatever. Like, that idea of being two partners equals can go for any type of relationship, regardless of what the gender is of the two people
involved. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, seriously.
Yeah. I just wanted to bring, because you said regardless of gender, I'm like, oh yeah, that was also another thing that's like kind of regardless of gender.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so much. To sum it up, body image has a lot to do too with just mental state and such. And I think just the, you know, compounding identity crises I was having in terms of like, how do I identify? And because I remember feeling like maybe I'm just attracted to women. I mean, this is going into like sexual stuff and you know, hookup culture and stuff. Like, I couldn't even imagine doing the do with random dudes. But for some reason, like in a way it put me off, but like for some reason, like with women, I'm like, oh yeah, 100%, you know? Yeah. I guess just like the ways in which I was navigating that on top of like my own mental health, which, you know, I mean, anxiety, depression, what have you, all this other stuff, like that was my experience. You know, I'm sure, unfortunately, a lot of us, you know, I have that experience. But now that we're coming to light about talking about it, like, I think it's so important to recognize that, like, especially in your early 20s, like early 20s was not it. Like, I'm grateful for what I learned from it, but oh girl, it was like a lot. Like, I think just those compounding issues were what made me, I think, have such a struggle with my body image. And to those of you listeners who are also going through that, I mean, I can't speak to eating disorders, for example, because I don't know that I ever was diagnosed or suffered from maybe binge eating. I don't even know if that's a formal diagnosis, but to those of you out there struggling through whatever it is, like, it does get better. Like, and you don't have to label yourself, like, just because I found clarity and peace with my label of being bisexual doesn't mean that someone who's going through the same things as I am, for example, has to also label themselves that way. And just the way that you express yourself does not define who you are either. I remember feeling like I had to dress a certain way to, like, I don't know if this is a thing. I remember being like, I gotta signal to the other girls in the room who might be queer that I'm also queer, you know, like bi-coding, I guess. you know, I have to do that. Like, I felt like I had to do that in order to be truly queer or to do what we were supposed to do within our community, which is to like be quote true to yourself and to represent. But like, you don't have to in order to be a fully realized bisexual person. Like, however you are, you define that. You don't let the label define you. And that's kind of where I wanted to like get at with that.
Yeah, I love it. And that's almost ironic in the sense of like, mm-hmm. that, you know, statement of, oh yeah, be true to you, and then feeling like you can't be true to you and trying to fit into like expressing yourself in ways that are maybe like, as you said, like kind of common,
defined by society. Like, defined by society, right? Like, you're needing to, it's like, can I just vibe? Like, no, you have to, like, well, what are you? I'm like, I don't know, what am I? Like, you think I know, you know? Like, especially in your younger 20s, just the just uniquely difficult and arduous, I think, lifelong experience as queer people that I think most of us can relate to, of having to navigate being ourselves in a society that tells us not to be ourselves, or that tells us how to be ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yes. And as you said earlier, relating back to that point of it being a struggle to be ourselves and mm-hmm. identify and find that expression that fits and feels right. Like, as you said, you define the label doesn't define you, or something like that. You said something like that, I think twice, mm-hmm. and you brought it back. I'm like, I love that line. Yeah. As you were saying earlier too, that this is your experience and what you can attest to. And I forgot to at the beginning give our little disclaimer, which is whenever we talk about LGBTQ plus issues, it's important to keep in mind that we're not speaking on behalf of the whole LGBTQ plus community. We're just speaking on our own experiences. And I shared a little bit of research from Norway, and that speaks on, I guess, Norwegian woman, but probably woman at large, but that study was done in Norway because they are ahead of the game when it comes to long-term studies on bisexuality. But yeah, that this is just our experience. And yeah, LGBTQ plus people are not a monolith. If anything from this episode and other episodes can see that there are a very wide range of experiences. So this is just ours.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Bella, for joining us today. If you want to find Bella on the social medias, you can find her at Bella Funt. That's BellaFunt on Instagram. And where else do you want to share your
I guess Twitter, y'all. Twitter. Tweet with me, I suppose. We'll navigate this life journey together.
Yeah. Twitter, tweet, tweet, chirp, chirp. But yeah, so find her on Instagram and Twitter, and you can find the podcast on Instagram at the Virgin and the Beast podcast. We're not on Twitter because I'm lazy and I don't go on Twitter that much. So.
Well, you're lazy. It's a lot. Twitter is a lot. I just
it is a lot.
Love torturing myself on there, but it's all good. Learned a lot on there.
I feel like every social media has its highs and its pitfalls. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. All right. Well, thank you again, everyone. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share with a friend if you want to, or your partner. And yeah, have a wonderful rest of your day, evening, whatever it may be for you. And keep on buzzing.
Yay.